Welcome to Plastisphere, the podcast on plastic, people, and the planet. My name is Anja Krieger. In this episode, we focus on one of the biggest countries in Asia, India. India just passed its Plastic Overshoot Day on April 23. Plastic Overshoot Day marks the moment that the waste produced in a country exceeds the capacities of its waste management systems. So the rest of the plastic waste produced in India from now to the end of the year will end up in the environment. India is the world's third largest contributor to plastic waste after China and the United States, but it also has a huge population, 1.4 billion people. So per capita, Indians produce only small amounts of plastic waste, much less than a person in Belgium, for example. What has been India's position in the plastics treaty talks? Is the country on the right track to tackle the pollution? In this guest episode, you'll hear an excerpt from the podcast In Focus by The Hindu. It's hosted by G. Sampath, the social affairs editor of The Hindu, who speaks with Satyarupa Shekhar, a public policy advocate who works on urban governance, data justice, and plastic pollution. Satyarupa tells us more about India's positions on the Global Plastic Treaty. India is one of the countries that opposes a majority voting option, which has been a major issue hindering the progress of the negotiations. Beyond this procedural stance, what kind of treaty does India envision? Let's hear more.
India does not want any binding targets or any caps on the production of plastic polymers, and that it does not want any sort of regulation with respect to substances, materials, or the chemicals that needs to be used in this. And only, the focus needs to really be only on the downstream. So what they're saying is that no upstream measures need to be accounted for within the scope of the treaty. Now, this is, of course, against, the original mandate, which said that it would look at the entire life cycle of plastics. The second aspect that India has made a point about is that, of course, there should be some financing mechanism provided to countries to transition from plastics to alternatives. But in addition, what it has said is that this alternatives really need to depend on the accessibility, affordability of the alternatives themselves. So while, on the face of it, it looks like a very appropriate, demand, I think when we can talk about this later as well, that India has actually used this to ring fence conversations on real substitute and real alternative and actually promoting, further dependence on plastic. The third has been on voluntary measures. So they have said that, countries should be free to determine what they do and how fast they do take some actions. And the last has been that India has talked about trade and the WTO rules not being violated in promoting, environmental protectionism or environmental protection, sorry, not protectionism, environmental protection.
Right. So, I mean, broadly speaking, from what you're saying, Satyarupa, I mean, what I'm getting is that India is, despite the scope of the whole instrument being about the life cycle of plastic being, brought into the picture in terms of how we can address it, India is not interested in upstream aspect of production, etc. No cap on production, no cap on what kind of materials are used, etc., etc. Now, coming to this whole trade and WTO rules related concerns of India, what exactly are we concerned about? What kind of a conflict do we foresee between the proposed treaties provisions and the existing WTO rules that India is worried about?
So India has an unsubstantiated claim that there is a conflict between the WTO rules and the proposed instrument, the plastic treaty provision. Actually, that is not really the case. In February of this year, in February 2024, we had the 13th ministerial conference of the WTO. And there was a statement that actually the WTO released after the ministerial conference that's recognized that the Intergovernmental Negotiating Committee is going to be leading the process to develop solutions related to plastic pollution. Right. So this is coming out of the WTO itself. It's being welcomed by civil society across the world. If you look into a little bit around the WTO rules themselves, there are certain technical barriers to trade want to ensure that there are no unnecessary obstacles to trade. But at the same time, it recognizes that WTO members have the right to implement measures to achieve legitimate policy objectives, such as the protection of human health and safety or the protection of the environment, right? So this is actually enshrined into the WTO. And, you know, after the 13th Ministerial Conference, we actually have the Deputy Director General stating that several members of the WTO have already undertaken several trade measures on plastic pollution. We're talking about more than 100, I think 130 measures that have actually been already undertaken by countries across the world. Over 80% of these have come from the least developing countries and developing countries, right? So, you know, and there's been no dispute within the WTO about restrictions on trade around plastic. And I think, you know, the fact that India continues to make an issue out of this seems to need a little bit more investigation, I suppose. But what is interesting is that the Deputy Director General also mentioned that there is an informal dialogue on plastics within the WTO. And so far, 78 countries have participated in shaping what the WTO rules with respect to trade on plastics would entail. And, you know, I guess unsurprisingly, India is not among the countries that has participated in that dialogue.
Okay, that's interesting. I mean, we are on the one hand concerned about conflict with WTO rules, but we are not part of the forum within WTO, which is looking at these aspects, with which already has 78 countries.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Okay, interesting. Now, moving on to the actual, you know, the big picture with regard to the negotiations. I mean, from whatever little research I could do, there seems to be like two divergent approaches. Like in climate, you have, you know, the oil petroleum lobby, and then you've got the environmental lobby. Here there seems to be like when it comes to combating plastic pollution, there is one which wants to focus only on the downstream aspect. Once plastic waste is generated, how do you tackle it? You know, burn them or, you know, recycle them or whatever it is. And then there is the other approach, which is to focus on the entire life cycle of plastic, starting with the polymer production, you know, the production, the design, and then all the way down to downstream aspect of, you know, production of elimination of waste or managing waste. So, is there a clear conflict between these two approaches in these negotiations that you've seen so far? And what are the pros and cons of each of these approaches? And I mean, we already know, I think India stands for the downstream approach. So what are the pros and cons of either of these approaches?
Well, I guess we should be clear that the biggest argument in favor of a solely downstream focus is for unregulated profits for the fossil fuel industry and for the plastics industrial complex, right? They make profits, they stand to make profits at every stage of the plastic supply chain, right from the extraction and refining of you know, fossil fuels, whether it's coal, gas, or oil, to the manufacturing of plastics, as well as the disposal. Even shipping companies are being paid to transport plastic waste from developed countries to developing countries to, you know, so-called under the guise of recycling. So, you know, and these most of these countries are Asia and Asia and Africa, including India.
So what happens to the plastic which is shipped from developed countries to developing countries under the guise of recycling? We know, I mean, we did in our previous podcast, we discussed recycling is mostly a sham. So what happens to this plastic which is headed to a developing country for recycling once it lands there?
You know, in the history of plastics, of all the plastics that has been produced in the world so far, only 9% has been ever recycled, right? So that should already give us some idea of whether recycling is possible or not. What happens to the plastic that is shipped is to these many of these countries? There are horrifying stories of all of this plastic being dumped in either paddy fields in Indonesia, Thailand, Cambodia, Vietnam. You can actually see paddy fields full of plastic. It's in fact sometimes more lucrative for paddy farmers to actually allow their fields to be used for dumping this kind of plastic than for growing paddy. You know, that's the impact of this trade, the imbalance of this trade. Some of that plastic is actually getting downcycled. You know, plastic can be melted and, you know, thermoset into other kinds of plastics. In Chennai, for example, what my research showed is that a lot of this plastic was actually getting used to make kodams or pots of that are used to then store water. And many of the communities that are using kodams or pots to store water are low-income communities. And what we are seeing is actually, you know, this material that and leaches a lot of chemicals into whether it's water, whether they use it for making toys. So it's actually very toxic. Both the process of making it into something else, as well as the use of that recycled material, it's not stable. And we've actually had, FSSAI in India actually saying that recycled plastic cannot be used for packaging food, which means that they are very much aware that it actually is quite harmful for packaging.
Right. Yeah. Going back to my question, sorry, I interrupted you. With
this. Not at all. So that is really the argument in favor of a solely downstream measure is unregulated, unrestricted, unlimited profits for the plastics and the petrochemical industry. The industry is actually very much similar and the same as that which is participating in the climate negotiations. It is the fossil fuel industry. It is plastic manufacturers who are using fossil fuel to make plastics. And it is, the disposal, the companies that have interest in disposal technology. Now, the arguments in favor of a full lifespan instrument, an instrument that covers the entire lifespan of plastics, obviously has several benefits. One is that this is really going to be the only way that we can address the triple planetary threats. Right, so we have the triple threats, which are climate, biodiversity loss, and pollution. And we really need to curb both our use of fossil fuel as well as novel entities like chemicals that are being used in plastics. It's always better to go with the precautionary principle. Unless we've actually established that something is safe for use, we should rather not use it. And we have these kind of regulations when it comes to drug. There is a lot of regulation. There's no country in the world that is not going to have regulation on opium or even cigarettes, right? You need doctor's prescription for several kinds of drugs. We're talking about levels of toxicity that need to be regulated. A couple of months ago, PlusChem, a report came out about more than 16,000 chemicals are being used to make plastics, right? And unless we regulate both the production of the plastic polymer as well as the chemicals and additives that are used to produce those plastic polymers, we are not going to be actually able to address the threats to climate, biodiversity.
So right now there is no regulation of plastic production and what chemicals are used.
There are certain regulations, but I think it's less than 10% of the chemicals that are used are actually globally regulated. And the other problem is that we actually do not have a full disclosure of what kinds of chemicals are actually being used in the production of plastic. So it's up to scientists to actually tell us these are the kinds of chemicals that are being used. And that requires, constant testing, etc. Also, one needs to then go into treaty negotiations to actually begin to have global regulations on this. Right. So of the 16,000 chemicals, I think 4,000 odd chemicals currently have already been established to have hazardous status, but only 100 and maybe 130 of them actually have global regulations on them, right? So this is actually the scale or the magnitude of the problem. There's complete lack of transparency in the entire supply chain. There's unregulated use of chemicals that we are unaware of. And we're constantly thinking about, whether this disposal mechanism is better than another. But it's really just substitutions, right? We already know these are harming us. So I think we really need to just avoid these regrettable substitutions and, talk about the entire lives.
Right. Now, one big argument, when it comes to the reluctance of nations to reduce plastic dependency. When I say nations, let's include India also, in this. We are plastics dependent to a large extent, and we don't want to, it's reflected in our stance in these negotiations. We don't really want to give up on plastic. And one of the main reasons is that they are cheap, the marginalized sections, they sort of depend on it, they go to it for various purposes. And at the same time, critics of this line also point out that the plastics are cheap only because of subsidies to the petrochemical or plastic industries. Now, in the case of India, are there a lot of subsidies that make plastics cheap, or is plastic organically, so to speak, cheap in India?
It's interesting that you actually raised this issue, Sampath. Last year, there was a report on the lifetime economic cost of plastics. And I think the data said that for plastics produced in 2019 alone, the economic lifetime cost of plastic was $3.7 trillion, right? And this, I think, is more than even the current GDP of the country of India, right? $3.7 trillion. The report went on to say that the burden of this plastic pollution was actually being borne by low-income countries, despite consuming less plastic. And they are incurring a lifetime cost that is almost 10 times higher than developed countries, right? So there are structural inequalities and inequities that have been built into the current plastic value chain that not only distribute the burden of plastic pollution unequally among countries, but they further place this burden disproportionately on more vulnerable communities within our countries.
This was part of the conversation from the In Focus podcast by The Hindu. Listen to the whole episode on The Hindu's website or via the In Focus podcast feed. I'll paste the links into the show notes. They also have an episode on recycling, which I still have to catch up on. Thanks to Satyarupa Shekhar, G. Sampath, and Mandira Modi for these super insightful perspectives from India and for allowing me to share them on Plastisphere. The production editor for this episode is Sharmada Venkatesabramanian. Plastisphere theme music is by Dorian Roy and cover art by Maren von Stockhausen. Follow the Plastics Treaty playlist on plastisphere.earth and subscribe to the Plastisphere feed on your favorite podcast app if you haven't. That's it for now from me, Anya Krieger. Have a great day and see you soon.